Bob McCowan podcast for a Wednesday hump day. We bid you greetings and salutations. Yours truly, along with John Shannon on the little screen if you're watching on YouTube. And otherwise, you'll just hear his voice, which might be better. I don't know.
What do you mean you don't? What do you mean you don't know?
Well, they might rather just listen to you than have to watch you or look at you, you know?
I have a face made for
radio. Joining us to chat a little bit is the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, is with us. You look beautiful, Atkins. How are you? How's your off season now that it's like 12 hours old, technically?
Yeah, full steam ahead. Good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on, Bob and John. It's a sunny day here in Toronto.
Yeah, well, I know you you watched this World Series and paid attention to what went on, and the subject of today, as you well know, is the decision to take Blake Snell out. And I'm not here for you to question, you know, Tampa's decision.
It took you a minute to get to it.
There's no point screwing around, John. Life is short. You know, I don't know that I'm going to be able to finish this podcast, and you may not either. We're more confident about Ross.
Ross is going to host it by himself then. I mean, that's
And he could do a fine job, I'm quite sure. Having said that, I mean, look, I don't want to get you I don't want you to put you in a tough position here, but this whole philosophy of the way starting pitchers are used contradicts everything that I grew up with, John grew up with, and I'm guessing, even though that you're a few years younger than us, you didn't grow up with this thought. The best case scenario was a starting pitcher went nine innings. That was the best case scenario. Didn't happen all the time, but we used to talk about guys who could get 8-10 complete games in a year and how great that was, how important to a team it was. And now all of a sudden we have a completely different scenario where now it's all about, well, I don't want the guy to face a roster for the third time around. Blake Snell's got a two-hitter going. He's as good as I've ever seen him. Five and I think a third innings pitch, and boom, he comes out. What do you think when you see stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, I think, so several things. The first thing that comes to mind is something that you said, that you didn't grow up with it. I didn't grow up with it. I was a minor league pitcher and a college pitcher, and there was nothing that I desired to do more than to pitch nine innings. And there's nothing that Blake Snell desires to do more. And change is difficult. And I think that is the one thing that we just have to keep in the backdrop. And I think it's well said. We're not accustomed to it. We didn't grow up with it. The second thing that comes to mind, I don't know if you guys remember, you probably do, I'm sure you do, but not sure it's top of mind, but Blake Snell went six innings against the Blue Jays in game one of the playoffs and had a one hitter and came out after the six, and it worked. So that's the second thing to factor in. This is the first time it didn't work with Blake Snell. They have been really consistent in how they've managed him over the course of the year. So they would have been doing something different had they last night kept him in there. But having said that, you're absolutely right. It was, I think it was the best I've ever seen him throw too. So I'm sure that it was difficult for Cashy. I'm sure that it was not a slam dunk decision for him, but those are a couple of things that come to mind. The other thing that I think about when I see it is, you know, they, and Cashy, I think talked about it, is that they have gone after, you know, using the different angles approach for some time. They are consistent in thinking that there's significant value to that, that a different look, different arm angles, obviously from left-handed to right-handed when they went to Anderson. And the Dodgers were doing the same thing. And you guys know as well as I do, if had the Rays won, today we would be talking about why they didn't start Urias and why they started Gonsolin, because Urias was clearly more effective. And in some ways, the Dodgers took a similar strategy. Alex Wood was dominant for two innings, punched out three, was perfect. They took him out. And had Baez, you know, let up a run, they probably today, and the Dodgers lost, we'd probably be talking about why he didn't ride Alex Wood a little bit further. But I wonder how Kevin Cash is feeling today and thinking, like, man, is this the time that I should have gone against my, he probably is thinking about that and wondering if that was the time. So
he's also taken a little bit of heat for Nick Anderson, who did not pitch very well. I mean, and that's the other thing in all of this. You can, if you decide to take Snell out, it's who you put in that becomes the real issue. I think there's a lot of people saying, why didn't they put Castillo in, who would probably, you know, pitch, the hitters would probably put the ball on the ground more than they would put it in the air. That the other thing is, in many ways, and you touched on it, Ross, is that the Dodgers out-Tampa'd Tampa. And when you think about the road, how many pitchers they went through and when they did it and the timing. And Dave Roberts has been criticized for a long time about his inability to make that judgment, and he did it right last night.
Yeah, John, you know, it was right-handed, left-handed for the Dodgers. The, you know, who they use, Nick Anderson has obviously been one of the most, if not the most, he's been extremely effective all year. It's hard not to go with a guy who's been that dominant. You know, Castillo doesn't have the command that Anderson has, so he's probably, you know, thinking about that somewhat. But it's so interesting. Like, one of the things that I struggle with that in the conversation about analytics in baseball, I get accused of being an overly analytical executive. I'm a former minor league baseball player. To me, it's not about analytics, new school, old school. It's about a great game we all love. We're all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to win. And we're trying to beat other organizations with decision-making. And there is a learning curve with everything. And it's not, to me, about new school and old school. It's about being open-minded and doing everything you can to win. And sometimes that's going to be uncomfortable for teams, for executives, for managers, as we try new things and just sticking to your guns and doing what you've always done and dancing with the lady that got you there is not necessarily the only way to go. It's not there's different ways to win. And, you know, there's not one way to do it. I don't think that analytics is the way to go, and I won't think that just sticking with what got you there is the way to go. It's having incredible insight and information to help you make the best decisions on any given day. And both of those managers, Dave Roberts and Kevin Cash, have been very effective over their entire careers at doing that.
Well, I don't dispute any of that. The other issue that comes into play here, though, Ross, is how many of these decisions are made before games start.
Yeah.
That they aren't instinctive, that it isn't an eye test, because we, again, grew up, you know, in an eye test society where we watched a game unfold. We watched a pitcher perform. And conceptually, we thought we can identify, as observers, we can identify when a guy has it, doesn't have it, when he needs to come. You know, a lot of those things. That's the other part of this equation that I'm struggling with.
No, you know? I think that is absolutely, I could not agree more. And that's how managers separate themselves. That if we ever stop, you know, using the information that is in front of us and how effective they are, how effective they're not, is their arm slot job dropping? What is the look in their eye? How much confidence do they currently have? If we ever stop using that information, we're in trouble. That's difference making. And I'm speaking for the Toronto Blue Jays. I think you absolutely have to factor that in. And to your question of how much of it is predetermined, I can only speak for the Toronto Blue Jays. None of it is predetermined. It is discussed and talked about different strategies that could occur, just like anything else. Like if you're mapping out any series of decisions that you're going to be making, if you know what could occur and if you thought about it at least once or twice and think about what your alternatives are based on the information, you're probably going to have a better outcome if you think about those alternatives prior.
You know, the one name comes up. I mean, there's dozens, maybe hundreds of names come up. But let me throw one at you. If Roger Clemens pitched in today's era, and you judged him as quickly as pitchers are judged now, how many times would Roger Clemens never have made it through the first inning? because you remember Clemens bugaboo was always the first inning or two. There were many times he'd give up two or three runs in the first inning and then be lights out and throw a complete game.
Yeah, Blake Snell's that way. You know, Blake Snell, if he gets through the first, he's going to be pretty good. But, you know, I think it's less about the first inning. Roger Clemens is, you know, like, look at, there's still pitchers that are going nine innings and not as many, but there are pitchers that are pitching very deep into games. Verlander, Gerrit Cole, you know, these guys that are of the Roger Clemens talent level. And I think the question is, could Blake Snell be doing that? That's the question. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know if Blake Snell is as good as Roger Clemens. And
I'm not suggesting that at all. You know, you understand that. It's just the guy threw 70-something pitches last night. You know, even in a shortened season, even with all that's gone on, you know there was more gas in that tank, and they just decided to go a different direction. It wasn't because he was tired. It wasn't because he was losing anything.
And not only that, it was who he was going to face. I mean, he had been lights out against the top of the Dodger lineup, six strikeouts. And I mean, I even during the game when Betts got to first base, I think he turned to the first base coach and said, "I'm shocked that I didn't face Snell." And then he almost said it post game as well. That to me was the taking Snell out when they did is one thing. Who they had to face the next time around to me was the other fascination, because Snell had been so effective against that part of the lineup.
Yeah. I would just be saying a lot of the same things. Like I can't argue with anything you guys are saying, and you know, it's a great, that's why one of the many reasons that we love baseball.
It's magic. That's the magic part about it. It's the one, of all the sports, it creates more discussion because of this type of stuff. And on that topic, any solace for you that that the team that you lost to in the postseason got to the World Series?
I mean, I wouldn't say that it didn't enter my mind. You know, it's nice that to see that they're a very good team, the team that beat us in the first round, and that they were, you know, built to be in the World Series. You know, but really we're more focused on just the Blue Jays and how we can improve and how we take that next step.
With Ross Atkins, the GM of the Blue Jays, let's get onto a slightly different topic. You know, in this unusual season, a lot of adjustments had to be made. A lot of things were changed, roster sizes, this, that, and the other. And one of the things that certainly helped your organization was the playoff format was expanded. This is something that I've harped on for years and years and years. I believe more teams should have been in the postseason. Now we have seen that. And there seems to be a feeling, I don't know what you're hearing from the MLB front office, but a feeling that there's a possibility, even a likelihood, that the same format, playoff format, may exist next year or something similar. In other words, more teams getting into the postseason. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, like I think that there's a lot to be said for the rigors of a 162 game season and the benefit of being able to continue to play when you've been effective over the course of the year, and you know, expanding that by you know, a team per league or a couple of teams per league, I think certainly deserves all the conversation in the world. You know, then there's the other side of that story that you know, it's so hard to get to that point. And is the best team ultimately going to win if we start to expand that and, you know, expose what the talent pool is at the end of the road? So, you know, I don't have a strong opinion on expanded playoffs, on whether or not, you know, that is best for baseball or not. I think there's so many variables to that. You know, the thing about expanded playoffs is, to me, when I think about it, I think it's good for, you know, across the game for cities and for different regions to be more vested later. And but I also think about, you know, that, you know, what it means for a team to win more than the other over the course of 162, and the power of that, and that starting to be watered down. So, you know, it's something that ultimately I feel that we have to be open-minded and be listening to fans on. So from a pure baseball perspective, you know, I don't think it's game changing, but if the fans are driving that and feel that it's important, then I'm all for it. And I feel that we need to be open-minded.
Well, the, you know, in the expanded playoffs, the two best teams, the best team in the American League, the best team in the National League, did make it to the World Series, even with more teams in the playoffs. So, if you're going to get the correct result, then there really is, in my mind, nothing wrong with it. But the question becomes: is does it water down the importance, or is there a need for 162 games anymore? I'd like to see 154 personally, but that to me is and then expand the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's 154 is still a very rigorous season, you know. But I think that's well said. That's well said. It worked out well this year.
Yeah.
So as you prepare for next season, and we don't have any idea what that will look like. We don't know when it will start. We don't know about spring training. We don't know anything really. None of these decisions are etched in stone. But as you move forward, I assume, as in every year, you have priorities that you want to address or feel you need to address. Let me start with this question, because we're going to be a barrage here of Blue Jay-related questions. I assume you're happier with your outfield right now than you were at the start of the 2020 season. But I'm not sure that you're satisfied that you have all the exact right pieces there. How's that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Listen, our outfield was a strength for us this year. Randall Grichuk played very well in center. Teoscar made huge progress. Lourdes had an incredible year in left field. We need to be thinking about how we can improve it and take it to another level.
Your infield, on the other hand, is a little bit in flux, and there are people who think that maybe, you know, you moved Guerrero Jr. over to first base. There's some thought that maybe your shortstop won't be your shortstop for a long period of time. You probably need to address third base on some kind of permanent basis if you'd like to. Give me your general thoughts on an infield that appears to be, has the potential to be really good, but maybe in flux right now. Is that fair?
Yeah. I don't feel that it's in flux. I think the one question will be where Vladdy ends up playing. Obviously it's more likely that he'll be at first base, but we haven't closed the door completely on third base, depending on how his offseason goes. And maybe it could be just for short stints or certain periods of time that he could play there. But the confidence that we have in Bo to be an everyday shortstop is very high. Recency bias is a very powerful thing, and he didn't, his last several games, he wasn't at his best at shortstop. And I think a lot of people are focused on that. We are not. The body of work for Bo at shortstop, how much better he's gotten over the years and will get, he doesn't rest at, you know, what he doesn't take today as what will be. He is constantly thinking about how he can get better, and there's no doubt in my mind that he can be a long-term shortstop for the Toronto Blue Jays. So that Kevin Biggio has made such incredible progress at second base, have an immense amount of confidence in him. And here's the thing about infielders, defensive players in general, just they get better. Young players, when they first come to the big leagues, the one thing that really improves is defense. You look across the game at the shortstops in the World Series, Adames and Seager, they weren't the defenders that they are today. They have gotten so much better as defenders. And, you know, that the timing of the execution of plays, the lighting on fields, the the different views that they have, obviously the speed and the pace at which the ball is hit and is moving, the speed of the runners, the surfaces are different. The amount of information that they have access to is very different, and how that they can use it and deploy it. So defenders get better. There is no doubt across my entire career, I've always seen that. And I've already seen it happen with Bo and Cavan from their time in AA to the time that they are now. Vladdy's going to improve as a first baseman. Rowdy Tellez has shown huge strides at first base, and feel very good about him over there. We feel good about Cavan playing third and how much better he's gotten. So, you know, we'll look to fortify that infield, but feel like there's several ways to get better, and it's not just via acquiring other players.
Have your expectations of Guerrero changed, Ross?
No, John. They are still very high. The the bat to ball ability that he has had over the course of his career, the ability to adjust his swing and make contact in different counts and situations, the bat speed and the power. For Vladdy, it all just comes down to the position he's putting his body in. It's not about just getting the ball in the air. Mm-hmm. It is about the consistency with which he makes hard contact. And I think the ball will get in the air enough. So all of the things that, we've always liked about him and been so excited about, we still see all of those things.
I thought it's interesting that you say you have not discounted the possibility of Guerrero playing some third or maybe going back to third base. It was something I thought a lot about during this season too. And I suspect that at least part of that decision, Mr. Atkins, is the performance of Rowdy Tellez and needing to find a home for him, both defensively and offensively. And yes, you have a DH spot available. And I'm wondering how you feel about the DH position. There are many ways to use this position. In the early days, if I recollect correctly, generally there was a guy who was appointed the DH.
Yeah.
More often than not, an older player who didn't have the defensive mobility any longer but could still hit. And that was the guy you kind of put in that spot and then you looked for as you were going through year to year. Like anything else in sports, the DH position has evolved. What would you, in the best case scenario, what would your DH be? Would he be the same guy 162 days a year? Would it be a rotation of guys? How do you want to use that spot?
Yeah, I mean, I won't dance around it. I'll answer it as directly as I can. But it depends on the rest of your roster, right? So I'll just use our current setup. And our current setup in the Toronto Blue Jays, the ideal is that we're adding another versatile defender, athlete, or two that can impact the game in more than one way. So if that means that from time to time, Lourdes Gurriel, Randall Grichuk, Teoscar Hernandez, the players that we acquire, Vladdy Guerrero, are DHing, that's a great outcome for us. So that's our ideal, is that we increase our alternatives at not only just hitting the ball over the fence and hitting doubles and driving runs in, but also increasing our alternatives in the outfield and infield.
I tell you what, just not to change the topic completely, but the fact that it looks like the National League is going to adopt the DH all the time too, for the first time in a long time, I didn't notice it. And I didn't notice the difference during the World Series. And it was a blessing. The fact that the rules were the same for home games and road games, it's one of those things that in this short season in Major League Baseball, a couple of the rule changes they've made, I think, are going to improve the game overall in both leagues. And again, that's just a personal thought based on what the DH is. What you talked about in many ways is what the Dodgers have done in the World Series. With Will Rays. Smith. Yeah, yeah. It was great.
Yeah, the Rays and the Dodgers rostered. I mean, you look at the guys they had on their bench, and they're in many cases, everyday players that are just, and who they're DHing could be either catching, or they could be playing center field, or they could be.
We'll keep moving around. The catching position has become a lot more intriguing over the last couple of months for you guys with the arrival of Alejandro Kirk and what he showed. And here's a young guy who was he was an A-ball player, was he not?
Yes.
And I mean, his impact was significant. I have to think you were impressed by the performance of this young guy. And yet, as a catcher, with the limited experience that he has, do you see him going back to the minor leagues, assuming the minor leagues play next year? Or did he show you enough to make you wonder or believe that he's ready?
Yeah, so first, Alejandro has been very impressive, and it is interesting. This was such a different year. So he had only played statistically in A ball and never been, you know, above that. But our alternate site was, we viewed it as comparable to a hybrid of double A and triple A, and they were playing games on a very regular basis daily. And he was competing against what we thought was comparable to triple A major league pitching. And then he was also catching triple A and major league pitching while he was there. And we had, because of the control we had over the environment and what could happen in a game, we could do creative things to help him with his development and help him be more prepared for what it may be like to catch Matt Shoemaker in the big leagues, and how he would be thinking about setting up the Rays lineup, how he would be thinking about setting up playing against the Yankees, and working through all of those things before he got there. Then we brought him to the big leagues for a week to work through them more specifically while he could watch those games. And those are things you can't always do. We were able to do them this year. So I think really it comes down to Alejandro has battled his weight his whole life. And he is very open about it. He is very honest about it. And it really comes down to, can he put himself in a position to catch every day, or at least every other, and still DH from time to time? Back to the DH discussion. Mm-hmm. But can he put himself in a position where, you know, he and we feel good about 154 or 162, whatever that number of games is going to be over the course of the year? If not, then he'll most likely be better served, and we will be better served if he's still continuing to work towards that goal in the minor league.
So you got him on a dietary regime then, or you're working with him?
Yeah, we've always have. He's always worked hard at it, and we'll continue to do that. We are, he's been awesome. He really is. He is a very, very mature 21-year-old, and he's embracing the challenge, and he's aware of it. Everybody's different, and yeah, he's easy to pull for, and we absolutely have a process for him in that area.
Do you subscribe to the theory that the learning curve for a catcher can be a more strenuous, more lengthy one?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big concern for us, and that was the thing that we struggled with the most was, are we going to be overexposing him and then impacting his ability to impact the game offensively? We felt very good about his at-bats and his ability to come up and compete offensively. And defensively, what we worried about was not only the rigors of just receiving, blocking, throwing, but the different strategies for game calling, especially with the amount of information that we have today and other teams have. Mm-hmm. The importance of knowing all the tendencies, how players adjust, how players adapt, how guys are trying to get signs from second base and relay them to the hitters from second base, the different sign sequences that pitchers have for every hitter, for every for every pitcher, there's a different sign sequence that each catcher needs to remember. So we worried about all of the demands on that, and that's why we went through that process at the alt site and then brought him here. And he just kept checking every box and showing that he was going to be able to handle it when we worked through it you know, in a in a more mock setting. So I do agree that it is more demanding, and he showed us that he had the mental and physical ability to handle it in a short stint.
How close are you to knowing what your five-man rotation is? Although Bob wants a four-man rotation, make note of that right now, but how close are you to having your five-man rotation?
Well, especially now that they're only going to throw 20 or 30 pitches a night. I think you could probably have a one-man rotation. But go ahead, Atkins. You explain the situation.
Ross has come out of retirement. Ross has come out of retirement with the pitch.
I mean, listen, we need to add to our pitching. We feel like we have a great starting point with Yunshin Ryu. The other pieces that could be making significant impacts, we talk about the names all the time. And, you know, obviously there's several that are more prevalent, and Hatch and Kay and Merriweather, the strides they made this year. Nate Pearson is one that everyone's very familiar with. Acquired Ross Stripling, very confident in saying that Tanner Roark will be a better version of himself next year. The shutdown during COVID really impacted him in a significant way, and he just got off to a tough start. So that's a really good starting point to have before we're even talking about Alec Manoa and Simeon Woods Richardson and TJ Zoit. So we'll look to add to that, and hopefully it's in the middle part of the rotation and higher. And we're hoping to to be someone who is of significant impact and not just stabilizing, but that's not easy to do. So we'll have to be creative and open-minded, and we'll be in on, you know, obviously every pitcher that could be contributing at the top of a rotation.
How big is the change in now being a team that has gotten to a point higher in the mountain than you have been in the last couple of years? Because every step along the way in the development of a team, almost from scratch, which is what you guys did, you took it pretty close to the wood. Things change. The decision-making changes. You have young players, as you mentioned, especially pitchers, that you are hopeful for. And yet at the same time, you have other players, your position players, have emerged as having a level of quality. And you hope they will continue to emerge. And you want to try and make sure that the pieces all kind of fit together at the same time. So, do you feel like you're less likely to give a, you know, 22, 23-year-old pitcher a chance in this team and would rather go out and try and find a veteran through free agency or through trade that you know can help this organization today?
I don't think we're less likely to give someone an opportunity if they're earning it. You know, if they have shown the ability to command and get swing and miss at the highest levels, then, you know, how they're doing it, if we feel that it will impact us, we are going to have opportunities. But we're also going to need to add via free agency and trade. So, you know, you guys know it well. I would be a broken record to talk about the importance of depth, especially in pitching. But we're going to need both. You know, we're going to need the contributions from the names that I mentioned, and we're going to need contributions from free agents and hopefully via trade too.
How close are you to competing on a daily basis and in postseason with the Yankees and with Tampa? How close do you feel you are based on a lot of positives that occurred during this strange season?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're already there competing. It's just a matter of winning more than they do. So that's what we're looking to do. We were very competitive with both teams. You know, you could argue that in many ways we outplayed the Rays. And, you know, if you looked at just, you know, how the games transpired, what the games were won and lost by, you know, outplayed as it relates to hits and maybe hits allowed, but defense is what you know did us in against the Rays and the Yankees. We were toe to toe with, except for those first two games when we went into New York, but every other game we were right in or we won. So Competing, I'm not worried about. It's getting over the hump where we're winning more than those teams are, and they're very good teams.
We want to let you go, but and I know you don't have answers here, but you can just say you don't have answers if it's the truth. We are, of course, one day after the World Series has ended, intrigued by when this next season starts, when spring training begins, and many, many other questions that don't relate to individual ball clubs or performance. They relate only to what's the structure going to be. Do you have any insight? I mean, you must be aware of some of the things that are being discussed.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have some insight into it, but I think the honest answer is that there's so many larger factors at stake here than Major League Baseball has control over. I think we're all planning towards as close to a regular schedule as possible, and if not, it being just as what we've always had. And that is certainly all I've heard, is that is the plan, is how can we make sure that happens, and how do we make sure that we're thinking through all of the contingency planning to make sure that we're prepared to do what's best for the game, what's best for fans. So but you know, obviously it's been a tough run over the last month in the U.S. And we've seen a spike here as well, here in Toronto and in Canada. So I think the next month will be very telling. But, you know, I can say this. I'm extremely encouraged about next year. Every time I have a conference call with Major League Baseball, I always hang up with a very good feeling about us being able to continue to make progress, and we'll see what the results are.
And you're planning in parallel Toronto and Buffalo? because realistically, that might be your biggest obstacle.
Yeah, no, we won't limit ourselves in any way as we think about the potential contingencies. We need to plan for every possible scenario and maximizing them and making sure it's not just what we did. Like, is there a better scenario? Can we make it better if for whatever reason that we are having to consider that?
So, no, with that, does that mean that in addition to Toronto, and because in the end, Buffalo was pretty successful for you in many ways. Yeah. Would there be somewhere else you'd play?
I mean, we're focused on playing in Toronto, and then the contingencies we need to be open to. We need to be open to the potential of, is there a better scenario than Buffalo? Buffalo did work out exceptionally well for us, but we need to make sure that we're considering all of the angles.
We'll let you go. We wish you a fine off season. I know it's not really off season for a general manager because so much happens.
Yeah.
Well, will there be winter meetings?
Yeah, I was going to say, you do them on Zoom?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been determined on the winter meetings. There won't be GM meetings. We will have virtual meetings with other executives and then across the industry. Those have already been coordinated on the GM front. And then we'll see what happens for the winter meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
All right, Bob and John.
All the best. Thanks during the off season, and we'll bug you down the road sometime if you don't mind.
No, that was fun. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Nice anytime. To see you. The general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, for John Shannon, Bob McCallum. See you next time on the podcast.